Talk Shoes. Recorded live.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Talking Twilight Zone. I'm sorry.
Too much fun today.
Know who they are?
No, I don't know.
Strange type for this neighborhood. And you stay away from him, young lady.
Is she really going out with him?
Well, there she is. Let's ask her.
Betty, is that Jimmy's ring you're wearing?
Mm-hmm. Gee, it must be great riding with him.
Is he picking you up after school today?
Mm-mm.
By the way, where'd you meet him? We see.
That's when I fell for leader of the pack.
Did you see that bus? It pulled right away. It's like a game with them. They just like to make people suffer.
Why do they do that?
Oh, it beats me. Just thank your lucky stars you don't have to depend on buses to get around.
Stars are lucky?
Well, you know that old expression.
Well, I understand a great deal about the constellations. That is the nature of the galactic structure, but... I mean, I dig stars, but so they're lucky? That's a gas.
Yes, so are you. One minute you sound like a professor, and the next minute you're talking like a beatnik.
You need a ride?
Well, you're not going by the library by any chance, are you?
I could.
With me on the back seat?
Why not? Are you ready?
Yes.
Johnny Angel.
Johnny Angel.
Johnny Angel.
Johnny Angel. You're an angel too.
Something that I can't resist, but he doesn't even know that I exist. Johnny Angel, how I want him, how I tingle when he passes by. Every time he says hello, my heart begins to fly. Him and me, and how it's gonna be.
Other fella,
call me up for a date, but I just sit and wait. I'd rather concentrate on Johnny Angel, because I love him.
Trust our brother.
What has he done?
He's formed an attachment here with one of the people.
What kind of attachment?
I'm not sure yet. He's with a young girl in spite of our orders.
Proceed without him.
Good. We've been in touch with all units.
The second wave has landed successfully and is concealed as planned. With the landing of the third wave, we will be in key positions throughout the country.
Excellent.
The people, are they suspicious?
Not a bit. They're a stupid race, as our research told us. An inferior breed given to killing, hatred, making war, greed, and cruelty to one another. The universe can well do without them.
You will receive your instructions for the final move in a few days.
Thank you.
Of a mouse. Beyond it is a world of sound, thought, and opinion. In-depth discussions of television's greatest blending of science, superstition, imagination, and you're invited along. We'll be talking Twilight Zone.
Good afternoon, everyone.
The sign of the donut. You see that?
Oh, good afternoon, everyone. As
Nanu. Hello.
We're the crazy Nanu crew here at Talking Twilight Zone. I'm your host, Lynn. And I was laughing earlier because I found out one of our very long lost listeners came back. Bear fan Ron. Yeah. Bear fan Ron is back. And he
picked such a
laugh.
Wonderful one to come back to on that.
That's right. And
good
he made
for
me
him.
Laugh.
Good for him.
He made me laugh right before I had to say something. But that's okay. That's right. We need laughter today for the show. Oh my God. Yeah, we're here today. Talking about one of the not so excellent offerings of the Twilight Zone and not so good episodes of season 5, and it's called Black Leather Jackets. So I'm going to turn this over to what's your name? Oh yeah, Robert. Yeah, that guy Robert. I'm going to turn it over to him for the
episode. Hey, it's kind of sad. I forget my name once in a while too. You never know who I am.
Sick of no respect.
Still no respect. I tell you, it's tough.
All right.
Yeah. Oh, you're waiting on me? You're going to be waiting a while, you know? Okay, here we go.
Three strangers arrive in a small town. Three men in black leather jackets in an empty rented house. We'll call them Steve and Scott and Fred, but their names are not important. Their mission is... as three men on motorcycles lead us into the Twilight Zone.
He got plain into
Oh, my goodness, yes. Black leather jackets, okay. They are beautiful, the black leather jackets. It's one good thing you can say about them, that they are gorgeous pieces of outerwear. But here we are with three beings in disguise as human males. Guys, men, wearing black leather jackets, and they're part of an advanced alien invasion force. They were sent to Earth to infect the city water reservoirs with bacteria. They're here to poison the water, in other words, and their plan is to kill all humans and domestic animals, as stinking rotten creeps. Animals, jeez.
I thought they were just coming to looking for some nice clothes to wear.
You would think, you know.
let's go shopping here at Earth.
Yeah,
we want black leather jackets.
Go check out Michael Kors or something. But it's just unbelievable. They're here to kill humans and animals, poor animals, you know, and the humans too. And their own race, they need room to expand. Oh, my goodness, they don't have
enough
room.
Well, they're mad at the dog for pissing on their boots, so that's why.
way for them to take over the Earth. And the excuse that was given by their leaders for the extermination is that humans are violent and hateful and therefore need to be destroyed. Okay, so they're combating violence with violence. I just love that. Yeah. Okay. But the youngest of the three, his name's Scott, Scotty boy, he falls in love with the girl next door, Ellen, and he tries to convince the leader of his world that not all men are evil and that love exists among people of the earth. But the leader wasn't having any of that. He wasn't interested. So Scott tries to convince Ellen to run away with him so that she'll escape her, you know, inevitable death. But Ellen's so terrified of his claims. I mean, she doesn't believe all this crap he's spewing out. And she thinks he's mentally disturbed. I wonder why she thought that. But
I think this whole episode was mentally disturbed. To be honest about it.
And her father then calls the local sheriff. And his deputy, the sheriff's deputy, answers the phone. And they find out that he finds out that they want him to take Scott away. But then the deputy turns out to be part of the invasion force intending to punish Scott for defecting by telling what was going on to Ellen. And the Tillmans, well, they try to comfort their daughter. And they realize that they're not doomed. They're not doomed because, you know, the deputy comes in now. You know, really, it really was a piece of crap. I really can't say anymore. I mean, two words describe this episode. Stupid and weird, you know? A man's
pissed
off.
But see, they made a mistake. They shot the sheriff, but they didn't shoot the deputy.
I shot the sheriff. You got this man here, okay? Ellen's dad. He's pissed off at his new neighbors because they're renegades. You know, they have this goofy antenna screwing up his TV. So he goes to their place, he yells at them, and they use their powers to change his way of thinking. Come on. And then he goes home and he tells his wife that they're really nice boys. They're not hoodlums, they're nice boys. Yeah, and then the stupidity goes on from there. You know, they're actually aliens on a mission to destroy all mankind by poisoning the water. Really? Are you kidding me? That's the best thing these moron aliens can come up with to destroy the earthlings. We're going to poison the water. First of all, they're aliens. Aren't they, like, evolved? Aren't they? So can't they just come down and go zap and just zap us all? I mean, why do they have to poison anything? Why can't they just kill everybody if they want to? That's such a bunch of crap. And Ellen, the daughter, she gets cuddly with Scott. He's the youngest member. And then he spills the beans. He tells what's going on. Dad finds out, calls the cops. The cops, one of the aliens. And, oh, well, so much for the long arm of the law, you know, because the law isn't going to do anything. The law is part of the idiots. You know, Scott's taken
away.
Well,
Lynn, it's like that blonde in that commercial with the chainsaws. And
oh, yeah.
She gets smart
why
and says, let's take the running car.
Why can't we just get in the running car? Are you kidding?
Let's hide behind these chainsaws.
Let's hide in the attic.
No, in the basement. Why can't we just get in the running car?
Are you crazy? Let's hide behind the chainsaws.
Yeah, okay.
If you're in a horror movie, you make poor decisions. That's what you do.
Shh, I'm being quiet. Breathing on me.
If you want to save 15% or more on car insurance, you switch to Geico. It's what you do.
Well, anyways, God, they take Scott away. The aliens' plans can continue without any problems. And, you know, it's just so ridiculous. I can't even begin to describe the stupidity and asinine thinking that must have went into this episode. I mean, the aliens try to keep the missions quiet. They ride around on loud motorcycles. They're confrontational, draw attention to themselves. Stupid, and really stupider. In Rod's intro to this episode, remember the previous episode. Now, Rod does an intro to the next episode, or he used to, you know, when they first aired. And he called these guys beatniks. Hey, God, remember when they were called beatniks? Yeah, that was in the 60s, beatniks. That was a common term back then, yeah. Haven't heard
I thought
name.
The beatniks were the ones with drums and red poetry.
Well, they were beards and, you know, they looked like Sonny, they all looked like Sonny Bono. You know, beatniks were like, you know, they're all Sonny Bono looking types, you know, hippies, but beatniks before they were hippies. So it might have been, I think the story might have been more plausible if the invaders had simply come to Earth as a normal family, and then no one ever would ever be suspicious. Why show up as a bunch of moronic bikers? I don't know. But the only notable name in the episode is Shelley Fabre, and of course she played Mary Stone throughout the Donna Reed show, I believe it was, for like 6 years, 8 years, whatever amount of time it was on, and she was in a few Elvis Presley movies, and she had a hit song with which Robert played in the opening. Johnny Angel, how I love you. Yeah, okay. And other than that, nobody else in this episode was any real
Denver Pyle went on to play Uncle,
yeah.
Uncle Jesse in the Dukes of Hazzard years later.
And wasn't he also Doris Day's father in the Doris Day show?
I never watched Doris Day, so.
Oh, no, I never did either. But as far I think from looking him up on IMDb, I think he was Doris Day's father. And he was also in the Andy Griffith show.
Yeah.
He was in the Andy Griffith. He played Mr. Darling, part of the Darling family. Yeah, Briscoe Darling. That's what he was. So anyway, piece of crap all the way around. 0-0-0 from me. Real, real garbage. And so I'm going to turn it over to you.
Well, I don't know how to pick up from that, but it's unfortunate that I'm going to have to agree with you with this story, too. So,
Ron, Ron has to stop. Ron's going to keep me laughing.
Well, anyway, I just love how if you're going to invade Earth, should you bring yourself, you know, bring attention to yourself, or should you try to blend in? I mean, the whole purpose of, you know, I would love to see what the Alien Handbook said about, you know, coming to Earth and wearing black leather jackets and riding in town on bikes, you know. Is that what, during that time, everybody did was ride bikes and wore black leather jackets? If so, then the research wasn't done very well for this invasion. And it's kind of a silly invasion. And Dave would get this joke. It's probably Prisoner Zero before he got caught, don't you think? Talking about the eye and the TV there, but anyway, my questions that I have about this is, if you're going to pollute the water supply, and this would seem to be what the big plot was of this episode at the reserve with a deadly bacteria, wouldn't the water just dilute the bacteria? I mean, it wouldn't kill everybody. If anything, it would probably make them sick. And what would have been nice with this episode, and I know they couldn't do this because you only had 22 to 25 minutes, you know, not see the actual devastation itself, but, you know, maybe end with someone drinking some water and some coughing going on would have, you know, piqued my interest a little bit. Very disappointing that it was, like you said, Lynn, is a piece of Mr. Hanky crap there, but
crapola.
Again, here we go with the talking again, and very little action. Anyway, of course, this was written by Earl Hamill Jr. Why, you know, wouldn't be anybody else.
Surprise, surprise.
Yeah, I think he got this idea from a low-budget movie that was in 1959 called Teenagers from Outer Space. And this one was an evasion movie from that era, include a giant lobster killing people and ray guns that turn people into skeletons.
Instructions are to prepare for an attack by an unknown enemy. That's what he meant.
Thank you.
are anyway?
Answer me, or I destroy you.
Stop.
There's something behind this, something we don't understand. The weapon he uses, it's unheard of. Blasting flesh right off the bones.
Master control to fleet, set flight pattern to minus -0.08. Increase speed.
They're coming right at us!
Get down inside the cave!
They all that was missing from that movie was a vat of melting butter for the gigantic lobster. Then everybody could have feast. Unfortunately, yeah, it was very much a waste of viewing time. The story even gave motorcycles and James Dean a bad name, unfortunately.
Yeah, you know, but I was thinking that's probably where Earl Hebner got this from. You know, like saw a James Dean movie and decided to do something, you know, with Black Leather Jacks and motorcycles. And it's like, come on, Earl, this is not your thing.
Well, the whole thing with 20 to 25 minutes, it don't give me enough time to develop the story. And I think this story really needed to be more developed. It you know, you're trying to squeeze all the stuff, you know, into 20, 25 minutes. Now, you know, he needed to keep it simple, like monsters, but he didn't. And he tried to get complicated with this, and he just the time. It just made the story terrible. I mean, it's like you're splicing a piece from hour and 20 minute movie or whatever, and you're taking 20 minutes of that hour and 20 and just putting it right there. You're not giving it time to help. You're not giving the time to do much of anything.
Yeah, exactly.
You know? And then you try to have these people talk, you try to have them do the info dumping, and that ain't helping much neither. So, you know, it looks like an Ed Wood movie, to be honest about it. If a lot of us knows who Ed Wood was, he was the kind of producer, director that made these really bad movies, but some of them, it's like watching a train wreck and you can't turn your eyes away. And one of his ones, best popular one, was Plan 9 from Outer Space. And you can see the, you know, wooden plane wheel and, you know, lights flying over and everybody's falling down and people getting stuck when they're walking in the graveyard and, you know, things like that. That kind of movie. And unfortunately, it was that kind of episode. So if we had a rating system where we could give it a 0.5, I mean, if I'm putting this on a scale on the Bard being the worst, I would have said a 0.5 out of 5. But unfortunately, I have to go with what we have, and I'm going with a 0. This is probably one of my third episodes that I placed a 0 on. So, It was a harsh thing for the eyes to watch, Dave. That's the problem.
That's right. Felix said he always thought that Earl Hebner was more of a rural and hokey writer. Well, he actually was. He wrote a lot of rural stuff. I mean, because that was his background. He was the writer of The Waltons. He did The Waltons TV series.
And that lasted 9-10 years, didn't it?
It was actually a very good series. Yeah, it was a very good series, you know, but he was not too good with his Twilight Zone episodes, absolutely not.
Well, The Hunt is the best one to compare to The Walton.
Oh, God, I love The Hunt. That's one of my favorites. That was an awesome episode.
Well, I'll pass this over to Bobby. Bobby, I know you're going to have lots to say about this one, aren't you?
Oh, Bobby loved it.
Don't know what all the bitching is about this episode. It's clearly the best episode of season 5. There's no question about that. Because after all those endless abortive attempts at humor in this series, finally there's a story that's actually funny. It took long enough. I mean, all those episodes, I won't name them all, in which they actually tried to take a serious series and inject humor into it, none of them work. I mean, honestly, if you can have an episode with Carol Burnett in it and you can't squeeze out a single laugh, then you really are barking up the wrong tree. That right there proved that they were never going to be funny. But if you can't laugh at this, you can't laugh at anything. It's obviously as asinine as can be. And I won't rehash what everybody's already written and said about it, other than to say that if you really want to know how to write a story, and goodness knows, there's enough stories in the Twilight Zone of alien civilizations trying to take over the Earth. If you really want to know how to write a story like that, watch this episode and watch The Monsters Are Due on Maple Street right after it. I mean, there's a classic story about monsters taking over, and not only do they not show up as a motorcycle gang in a residential neighborhood, but they don't show up at all. And they simply let Earthlings kill each other, as they make clear at the end of the episode, that they're just going to go from neighborhood to neighborhood and let everybody's fears and prejudices take over, and they'll be able to walk in and take over the whole planet. They don't have to poison the water or do anything ridiculous. That's a classic episode, obviously, one of the great stories of all time of The Twilight Zone. And that was written by Rod Serling, and this is the exact opposite. This is just completely asinine. I can't really seriously believe that anybody took this seriously. I can't believe that Rod Serling looked at it and said, oh, this is really going to scare people. I think the whole thing is just a put on, to be honest with you. And the scariest thing about this whole episode is that CBSI that keeps looming on the TV screens, it looks like it's, and that's something to really fear, because it looks like the CBSI is about to cancel the series, which is exactly what's going to happen, if indeed they haven't already made the decision to cancel the series. It's absolutely dreadful, and it's stupid, and I can't believe that Robert would say it needed to be fleshed out. You really want to see this as an hour episode? Are you serious? You want this in the hour season? Honest to God. If the Bard wasn't bad enough, you got to go with this, too?
I mean, well, the problem was they I wouldn't have put it on as an hour air. Actually, I wouldn't have picked up the script at all, to be honest about it. So.
Oh, obviously. But it just is absolutely dreadful. And as everybody has already said, I mean, it's obviously, and I say this every week because everybody knows that it's near the end of the series, and CBS has pulled the plug on the budget. They're not giving them any money at all. And if you have any doubts about that in this story, take a look at it. There's nobody else in the neighborhood except that one family and the motorcycle gang. There's nobody else around. They couldn't even pay anybody. I mean, other than the opening scene where they go into the real estate office, they couldn't even pay any extras. I mean, in Maple Street, there were people all over the street, but not anymore. We're not going to pay to have anybody in the story. So the only people in the story are the motorcycle gang and the family, that one family. And it looks exactly like what it is, but it was filmed on the back lot somewhere. It's absolutely absurd. So the only thing you can do is really laugh about it. It's too horrible for words. And you know, the only good feeling I have about this, because I always like when I can find anybody who's older than I am, is that Shelley Fabre will be 71 years old in January. And that is hard to believe, 71 years old. And the actor who played Scott, the one who supposedly falls in love with her, he really was very high, according to what I read on the Internet, he was really very highly thought of at that time. He was thought to have a great future. They thought he was kind of a James Dean type. I don't see it, but they had high hopes for him. And things turned out very badly. He had no career in acting after this. He appeared in some series, and eventually gave up acting and decided to buy a boat and travel around the world. And he died 10 years after this episode. He was only 36 years old.
Of
a lung disease. Nobody even, it's not even clear what it was. It was something. It wasn't lung cancer. It was something else. So he came to a bad end. But Shelley Fabre is still with us. And to be honest with you, if they really wanted to make a scary story, they should have had this motorcycle gang move in to the Donna Reed show. That would have really been terrifying. But as it stands, it's just laughable and instantly disposable. Now, Robert may have trouble giving it a 0.5 rating, but my written review at the group, I gave it a -5, because since I created the group and I created the show and I created the rating system, and I obviously am God, I can make any rating I want to. So I gave it a -5, and I'll stick with that. It doesn't even deserve a 0. But it is nice to see us all on the same page, at least the three of us, because we very rarely, I'm usually the cantankerous old goat who gives everything a 0. But this time, people actually agree with me, so I feel pretty good about that.
Felix gives it a 0, too.
Really? Fantastic.
Yeah,
I had a feeling that Dave was going to say, I rather liked it. It wasn't that bad, so we'll see what
Felix,
he says.
Felix gave it a big, fast 0. That's what he said.
Let's see if Dave can find anything to like about it.
Okay, go ahead, Dave.
Well, I rather. I've got to agree with Bobby in terms of the lack of money here is you can paper over the cracks so many times, and you come to a point where the thing doesn't hold together. I think the germ of the idea of the story was good for its time, but it was so clear. I mean, there was all you saw with the bikes. You saw them park the bikes 3 times. I've never seen Hell's Angel guys take so much care of parking the motorbikes.
Well, Brando did on the Wild Ones, Dave. Remember the Wild Ones where he's going in to eat and he parks the bike backwards? Yeah.
Well, of course, it's that, don't touch my bike. You can trash my girlfriend, but don't touch my bike. And the fact that we have the scene where he gives the young girl a lift to the library, they talk in the bandstand, and then the next time they're supposedly having a picnic, and it's still night. Obviously, they filmed 2 scenes at the same time, and so on. I also thought, let me just backtrack somewhat. We're on Series 5, Episode 138, and it aired the
January 31st, 1946.
46?
Man, that's an old one.
That's me transposing the numbers, isn't it? 64. The young lady, Shelley Fabrez, or whatever she's called, Ellen,
Fabrez,
just aged
20,
her birthday is the 19th of January, so presumably when she was actually filming it, she might have even been 19, and she's had an awful lot of credits since then, and as Bobby said, the young lead male romance model unfortunately died aged 36, but I am surprised that Robert, he's not diligent in his research.
No, I am, Dave. I thought I'd be nice to you and let you bring up that Star Trek episode.
Steve Apollo. Mm-hmm. Yes, Steve, the Michael Forrest actor, was in Star Trek, the original Star Trek, in Who Mourns Adonis.
Captain's log, stardate 3468.1.
What in the name of...
Am I seeing things?
Do not bring that one. The one with the pointed ears. Welcome to Olympus, Captain Kirk. Let the lesson begin!
God to us, mister.
And he played Apollo. Mm-hmm. So, all right, you've gained it back if you know what I was going to say. Well done.
Thanks, Dave.
He was a really... I don't know whether a man's allowed to say another man's beautiful, but he's like a beautiful man, and he was then cast as Apollo. He really is where I know him from. The chap that played the girl's father, of course, I've seen him in lots of things, always played in westerns and so on. He is a really good character actor. So they had the makings of what could have been a good story. By the way, I'm going to ask my intellectual friends here. The voice that we hear coming over
the
radio.
They didn't show up tonight. They're not here.
Yeah, the presumably that was done by our host anyway, wasn't it? He's uncredited, isn't he?
The voiceover?
The voice with the eye when the guy talks.
The voice with the eye.
Yeah.
Oh, that wasn't Rod Serling, was it?
Well, on the IMDb site. On the IMDb site, it says Rod Serling, narrator himself, host uncredited. So I'm assuming the host was the person on that cover. It did sound completely different if that's who it was.
If it was, they had to change his voice to make it more deeper because, I mean, they could have changed the audio on his voice. It could have been.
I don't think that was him.
Right.
But...
Right. I had a little bit of.
IMDb said that it's Rod Serling because he's in every episode. He introduces everything. That's all.
Yeah, but he gives him 2 credits for this episode.
No, it doesn't sound like him to me. I don't know.
No, it didn't. Mm-hmm. That's why I was putting the question out there. I certainly don't think so, Bobby, but that's what IMDb says. And then, you know, this. I know these guys build this thing from set, but I was thinking about the famous film, was it, with the Interocitor, where they have to build the Interocitor.
This Island Earth, yeah.
This Island Earth. But, it definitely suffered. I mean, two or three of the scenes were obviously made consecutively, although I suppose they normally do that, but there seemed to be no trying to disguise this. I also noticed, by the way, that when we're in the family house, where you have the couch at the front, and then there's this large opening into the hallway, and then there's that bloody grandfather clock from the 90 years.
Lumber.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, lumber, yeah.
So it's the house where they sent the clock next year. It's also the same living room that they used in Ring a Ding Girl, where the girl goes and visits her family, and it's the exact same set that they rebuilt. So what I'm going to say with Robert will understand what I'm going to say now is the fact it almost looks like what I call the double banking episode, where they built the sets and they film more than one episode on the same sets while they've got them up. It has that look about it. But that room that you see, you know, with the father, with the city, the staircase coming down, the opening into the hallway, that's been used on at least 3, if not 4 or 5 stories in this season. So they're obviously... Bobby's completely right. I mean, the money must have been down to zilch for this episode. So I am going to give it a rating of a plus rating. I'm tempted to give it 1.5, but due to peer pressure here, I might just go to 1. On paper, this could have been given a better airing, but it was so pared back. I mean, you can only pare back so much when, as I say, the cracks start to show and you can't disguise that it was basically, you know, somebody hit the piggy bank with a hammer and whatever was in it, that's what they used to make this episode.
Well, the whole thing is they could have showed them down at the reservoir, at least have like a stage thing or, you know, some kind of picture of the L.A. reservoir, whatever, and then have a scene of them down stuff ready, pouring it in the water, and then having actual people get sick, at least have the start of the invasion go instead of just standing there talking and talking and more talking.
Right. And, you know, because of the very low budget that they gave Sterling for the show, many episodes were filmed on the same sets at the same time. For instance, if anyone remembers from, I believe it was the first episode, Robert II, Rip Van Winkle Caper, one of the guys that wanted to go back 100 years or go to the future 100 years later. They froze themselves.
Yeah,
you remember
the same
Yeah, they stole the gold from the train, and then they froze themselves to go and to wake up 100 years later. Okay, the very next episode was 100 Yards Over the Rim with Cliff Robertson, filmed in the exact same location.
Well, they've done that. They've even done that with Classic Who. I mean, there's the Ark in Space story where they're on this space station, and the storyline is that they reappear back on the space station 100 years later so they can reuse the same sets.
Yeah. I mean, that's what they did. Even Mr. Dingle the Strong, which, you know, wasn't one of the greatest episodes with Burgess Meredith. Mr. Dingle the Strong, he was in the park at one point. The same park setting was used for the one with the robot and the kids, I think the Body Electric, the same exact park was used. They just the budget was so low they couldn't do a lot of set changes and location settings, and it's a shame. It really was.
Yeah, the Ark was William Hartnell. That was one where they did a takeoff of the H.G. Wells thing about the time machine. Kind of,
well, there was the fourth Doctor story in the Ark as well, the Ark in Space.
Space, yeah. And then they used the same set for the Cybermen one for that last season with the Tom Baker. Remember, they were on
the
plan.
Yeah. The point is, if you can do it and you can get away with it, then you're okay. But this definitely was underfunded. This is absolutely no doubt. But I think on paper, this script was probably no worse than some of the other scripts. It just, needed a little bit of
meat.
It had a little bit, didn't it? We've commented on this before, Robert. You know, this the one where the people turn out as pods. You know, like
Invasion, the Body Snatchers.
Body Snatchers. Yeah. I mean, where the deputy policeman comes to the house and they've got that sort of vacant expression on the face and they come to take that guy away and the three people. That's very Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
Mm-hmm. Excuse me, but I'm afraid that even on paper, I wouldn't even use this in the bathroom.
See, Bobby, you need to repair me when you come up with these so I can get the right sound effect for you.
You have a toilet flushing? Oh, you're really, come on.
Oh, yeah.
Here we go.
Yeah,
okay.
All right,
there you go.
Close enough. Okay. Bear fan Ron gives it a 1, and then he only gives it a 1 for the comedic value. He says it has 1.
Right, right. It is funny. Yeah, right.
It was funny, yeah.
Funny bad.
Yeah, bad funny, yeah.
One thing I did want to say and I forgot was, mm-hmm. This idea of when the girl's talking to the boy and she says, one minute you sound like a scientist and the next minute you sound like a hippie. It made me think of Star Trek IV. I'm sure Robert will get that reference where, when they're going to save the whales and they're talking to the girl that looks after the whales. And the way that, they get the vernacular sometimes, and other times they realise that it's so offbeat that there's something different. And they also did that in Star Trek Voyager, when Tom Paris comes back. They come back to Earth, but it's in the wrong time zone. And they go to the observatory and talk to that young girl and he's trying to talk. This is like this 1970s, but he's talking in 1950s slang, and and to try and pull that off is very difficult. One would imagine for an alien to get the right decade in terms of the way they speak.
Well, you mean, Dave, a double dumbass to you too? Something like that? Kind of vernacular? That Schaffner used?
He's got me.
Oh, God. All right, well, looks like...
I want to use some colorful metaphors for this show today.
Grace is pregnant. How do you know? She told me. That's the whale.
Mm-hmm.
Chekhov going with a Russian accent, going to the policeman and saying, "Where are the nuclear springs?" I went into Welsh then. I mean, you're in America... with a Russian accent, asking where the nuclear submarines are, you know.
Where are the nuclear vessels at?
That's it, that's the one.
Actually, I'm holding my mouse, and I'm getting ready to talk into it, Dave. Hello, computer.
A mouse, how quaint.
Yeah. Well, it looks like...
Sorry, we're having our own little show here.
I know, Well, I know,
Hey, I'm from Iowa. I just work in space.
It looks like across the board. Well, Dave, you gave it a 1, right?
I was tempted to give it 1.5, but I thought I might get a rap on the knuckles if I did that.
Oh, nah. Wouldn't rap your knuckles. I'm not close enough. But... you give her 1.
We don't have a Catholic nun to do that for you, Dave.
That's right. I don't have a yardstick. No, if you want to give it a 1.5, you go ahead and give it.
I'll give it whatever it takes to bring the average just above 0.
All right, that would be a 1. Okay.
Well,
everyone else has given it a 0, and if you give it a 1, that would bring it to a 0.5, I believe.
No, Bobby gave it a -5.
That's right.
Oh. All right, well, then you have to give it a 1.5.
Okay, 1.5.
All right.
But I do recommend people to watch that Teenagers from Outer Space just to see how bad that really is.
Oh, I've seen that. Is that the one with the giant lobster?
Yeah, with the teenagers and...
I've got a better one than that. Better one than that. Earth Girls Are Easy, where the three guys...
I haven't seen that in a long time.
Oh,
I remember that with Jim Carrey, Jeff Goldblum, and them. Yeah.
Yeah.
Gina Davis. Yeah.
Judy
Brown,
too. Nobody's interested until we see Jeff Goldberg's long tongue. And I'll leave it at that.
Oh, it's as long as Gene Simmons?
Well, let's put it this way. One young lady offers to take him home when she sees it.
All right, well...
But did they look better with or without the fur, I wonder?
Yeah. We end up with a final rating. Wait a minute. Bear Fan. Oh, 1. Oh, that's right. Bear Fan gave it a 1. All right. And Philly... Oh, okay, so we already had a 1. Because Bear Fan Ron gave it a 1. And you gave it a 1, Dave. And
1.5.
1.5. 1.5. So, yeah, so we're at a 1 rating. Absolutely.
I think we're with Bobby's -5. I think we're about half a point. 0.5, I think we're up to.
Well. And the duck under the wire duck gave it a 1, too.
Well, anyway, we got our ratings. Okay. And that takes care of tonight's show, which this was a great, great show. I had a lot of fun. And then... 2 weeks from now, and I do have to check the date on this, the 22nd. What?
Dave's birthday.
Whose
birthday?
Dave's
birthday was 22nd?
Mine's 22nd, yeah.
Ooh. Oh, Dave, your birthday's the 22nd?
Yeah.
Oh, that's great. Oh, you have to be here.
So you'll be 39, as old Jack Benny would always say? Dave?
60 bloody 8.
Oh. Jack Benny will always say he's 39.
60 bloody 8.
But with no A, B, C, or D behind it.
60 bloody 8. All right. Well, Dave's going to be 60 bloody 8 in a couple of weeks. And I hope all of you are here again to join us for one of my favorite episodes of season 5. And that is Night Call. Yeah, Night Call. With the incredible Gladys Cooper. Absolutely incredible actress. I just can't say, I can't say enough about her. It would take me all night to say enough about her. I think she's fabulous. She's been in, I think this might be her fourth Twilight Zone episode, and she's just unbelievable. So she is in Night Call, and that will be in 2 weeks on November 22nd, which is Dave's 68th birthday. And everybody's got to be here to celebrate it.
We'll even invite the Queen to come.
That's right. That's right.
And she's got the same surname as me, so even better.
That's right. Oh my God, I didn't think of that. That's right, Gladys Cooper. Are you related in any way?
Oh, I'm sure. Absolutely sure.
I'm
yeah.
Sure. Oh my God. So we've got Dave Cooper. We've got Gladys Cooper. We've got them coming next in 2 weeks for a Night Call. And it's great, and everybody's got to be here. It's going to be British night, Brit night. Yes. So everybody be here, and Ron.
Everybody make your kidney pies ready to go.
Kidney pies. Okay. Well, kidney pies. But anyway.
And bangers and beans. Bangers
and
beans.
And beans. I don't know about the kidney pies. But, okay. So, Ron. Please, Bear Fam, will you be here in 2 weeks? Because you haven't been here for a long time, and you like have a lot of making up to do. And you too, Felix. I mean, I love you guys, but you know, you go away, and you know, you go away for a long time, you don't come back, and then you show up, and you know, come on, the series is almost over, so you have to show up. So I want to see both of you guys here in 2 weeks for Dave's birthday. Okay, okay.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
If you show up, my meds are kicking in. If you show up, Bobby will give it 4 out of 5.
Ah, there you go. There you go. We'll get a good rating from Bobby if you show up. Bear Fan, you don't try. Be here. But trying is okay.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. I've got to stop you there. Robert, you need to do that in a Yoda voice. Don't try. Do. Come on, you can do it better than me.
Mm-hmm.
Don't try. Do.
Yes, don't try. Do. Don't dream it. Be it. Just show up in 2 weeks. All right, folks. It's time to end tonight's show, which was fabulous. And I'll see you all in 2 weeks.
It was fabulous.
And 2 weeks for the Dave Cooper birthday celebration.
Yeah.
Woo! Awesome. Okay, guys. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Until next time. This show is dedicated to my dad, Robert D. Wentz Sr., who was born February 13, 1942, and passed away October 31, 2014, at the age of 72. Rest in peace.
Blames the one before, and all of their friends. frustrations come beating on your door. I know that I'm a prisoner to all my father held so dear. I know that I'm a hostage to all his hopes and fears. I just wish I could have told him in the living years. Oh, crumpled bits of paper filled with imperfect thought, still to conversations. I'm afraid that's all we've got. You say you just don't see it. He says it's perfect sense. You just can't get agreement in this present tense. We all talk a different language, talking in defense.
Say it loud.
Say it loud.
You.